Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Creamer Law Firm, Creamer Law Business Law, CreamerLaw.com, and Des Moines Computer Repair. You want your computer to work, and that's what they do. DesMoinesComputerRepair.com.
It is the Monday edition of the Business News Hour, and with us, as he is at least once a month, is our friend Sam Creamer of the Creamer Law Firm. He specializes in business law and in estate planning, and from time to time, he gets to talk about both of those subjects with us here on the Business News Hour. Welcome, Sam. Good to see you again, sir.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be here.
He's growing his hair out and looking quite snappy again today. Purple tie and all.
Thank you.
We will share that photograph far and wide.
Thank you.
So we pay property taxes, Sam.
Property taxes are one of the items that people overlook when they start thinking about how to reduce their overhead. Property taxes are actually much more of an art than a science, and they are one of the things that people actually can control by making the appropriate steps and by doing the appropriate things.
Well, let's get into this and find out how in the world, because I think everybody would like to reduce their exposure or their outlay.
I have so many clients that come in and say they don't want to pay the maximum amount of tax, and that's hard to believe that anybody—
I can't imagine that.
However, it seems to me that each and every one of my clients is willing to pay their fair share. So the real question becomes, what's the fair share?
Right.
And with property taxes, it's actually much more subjective than most.
Well, it's how that property tax is calculated.
Property tax is calculated by multiplying a taxable value times a rate. Now, there's really nothing anyone can do individually as a taxpayer to impact the rate.
Right.
Okay, certainly, you know, there's a legislative process and those types of things, but by and large, the rate is the rate. So the place that there's an opportunity for taxpayers to impact is to talk a little bit about the value of the property that will be subject to that rate.
And how do you do that?
Well, the starting point is market value. Now, the reason it's so important to talk about this at this time of year is because 2017 is a revaluation year.
Oh.
So assessors throughout the state of Iowa are going and redetermining the market value of property.
This year?
This year.
And how do they go about figuring that out? I mean, I've heard everything from window, it's called windshield appraisals.
A windshield appraisal is when you're driving by in the car and you say, yeah, that's about worth that. I would tell you that it's a little bit more sophisticated than that.
Okay.
That really what's going on now is, in my opinion, a huge matrix has been developed. And this matrix kind of looks at what the type of property is and the square footage and the location, and they try to come up with some kind of calculation of value. And again, that's the assessor's responsibility, is to try to come up with a value. Now, when they're coming up with value, it's not simply a multiplicative type arrangement. You don't just simply say, okay, X times A equals, right, you know, G. The real starting point is, what is the class of the property? Now, the Iowa Code provides that there are basically five classes of property.
Okay.
Now, those classes of property are residential, multifamily residential.
Apartment buildings.
That would be apartment buildings with some—
Or duplexes
some,
or—
Well, no. A duplex is not multifamily. It's got to have at least three or more residents. There's commercial.
Mm-hmm.
There's industrial, and there's railroad property.
Railroad property?
Yes. So railroad property, of course, is taxed separately under its—
What about agriculture?
Agriculture is itself a separate type of property.
Right.
So that when you're looking at agriculture, you're looking at something slightly different than these other types of properties, because agricultural property is valued based on its productive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without getting too deep into the weeds as to how productive capacity is computed, that has to do with the CSR, the corn suitability rating, and it has also to do with, you know, location and topography. So agriculture is of itself a unique animal.
All right. All right. And so too are railroad. I've never heard of railroad property taxes.
In fact, there's a tax attributable to railroad property.
Does this go back like hundreds of years?
I would tell you that almost all taxation goes back
hundreds of years. Yeah, I'm sure.
But, you know, at one point, the railroads were really a
– That's the thing, yeah.
Well, they were the primary property owner.
Absolutely.
I mean, because everything else was broken up into little spots or actually owned by the government in some form or fashion, whether state or federal. So it was really a very significant ownership.
Now, when we talk about commercial property, Sam, that's probably because of the Business News Hour. Folks are, sure, interested and concerned about their home values, but also property and commercial property.
The starting point with commercial property is whether it is used basically for an income-producing purpose. And you're absolutely right that that is the opportunity that business owners have to control part of their overhead and their tax burden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once the determination has been made as to the class of the property, then there's a determination of the market value of the property. And therein lies the art rather than the science.
Okay.
The Iowa Code defines the market value as the price a willing buyer, willing seller, neither under any compulsion, and both with full knowledge of the facts, would exchange the value of the property. Well, that seems kind of speculative.
Yeah.
And so it's still the standard, but the way you try to figure out what a willing buyer, willing seller, et cetera, would do, that's a little bit more specific. The starting point for trying to figure that out is what has property sold for that's reasonably similar.
Okay.
Now, reasonably similar is very rarely exact.
I was going to say, yeah.
Everything's a little bit different, so it's always subject to some adjustments. But one of the key things that is important to that is, what did this property sell for, i.e., what did you buy the property for? Now, you'd be shocked at the number of people that try to run into the Board of Review and say, I paid way too much for this property. On the other hand, I would tell you that there are always comparables with adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the sole and exclusive way you value property. You can also look at the replacement cost. What would it cost to rebuild this property now? You can also look at the income-producing capacity. And finally, you can look at what some of the alternatives would be. Now, an important thing in determining the market value of property is it's the market value of property as property. Now, what I mean—
Not the business.
Exactly. You don't look at the particular use of the property. So, for instance, if someone has a car dealership and they have a unique structure— The property is still to be valued as property, not, you know, receive a premium because it's really important to this dealership. Similarly, if something has a below-market lease on it, which really decreases the income-producing capacity,
mm-hmm.
you ignore that also.
So it's property as property.
Property as property. That's sometimes called the fee simple determination, not the leased fee determination.
Simple, yeah.
So you don't count any leases. So once this has been determined by the assessor, you get the number. And you get the number, theoretically, by April 1st. Now, from April 1st till April 25th, this is a short period of time, and this is a statutorily prescribed period of time. So the time frames are really important. You can go to the assessor, you being the property owner, can go to the assessor and say, I disagree with this assessment. And there can be an informal give and take with the assessor. And he says, okay, you know, it's got granite, it's got this, it doesn't have that. And if they can arrive at a conclusion jointly between the property owner and the assessor, then that becomes the new assessment.
Done deal.
Okay. But what if not?
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got really a process that is based on a protest. And what the process basically requires is that a protest be filed with a board of review for the area, whether that board of review is a county or a city, but the board of review of the applicable taxing authority. And that protest has got to be based on five specified grounds, which are determined by statute.
So five things have to be.
You only have five reasons which you can protest your assessment.
All right. What are those?
Okay. The first is that the property is not being properly assessed as compared to other comparable property.
That would seem fair. All right.
The second is that the property is being valued for more than law allows, i.e., is being valued for more than its market value. The third is that it's not assessable, that it's exempt for some reason. It's a church. It's a water ditch. It's, you know, some.
It's something that doesn't fit into the.
Doesn't qualify for the property tax.
Got it.
The fourth is that there's an error. You know, you can protest and say, you said my house, my business had 4,000 square feet, and we were in a situation whereby it only has 2,000 square feet.
So there's an error, so we've
just
got
a mathematical error.
Got it.
And the final is that there's fraud in the assessment. And I would tell you that it is a very rare situation where someone appeals based on fraud of an assessor. These assessors are, by and large, very honorable people, and doesn't happen very often.
So when we get to this point and you've filed paperwork that says, I don't agree with any of this, based on one of those five principles, what happens then?
Then the Board of Review has a hearing on it. Now, as you can imagine, in Polk County, there are a lot. And what happens is the Board of Review schedules short periods of time and asks for the taxpayer to come in and explain what relief they want and why they want it. Now, it's very important how this protest gets put together. And the reason that's so important is because you cannot appeal a decision on grounds other than what are in the protest.
Got it.
So if you mess up the protest, you've messed up your process.
I think I know where this is heading.
This is heading towards people knowing what they're doing at the front end.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to be able to make sure that you're doing it right.
If you are still unsatisfied after the Board of Review, you can then appeal it to either the District Court or to the Property Assessment Appeal Board. Now, if you appeal to the District Court, again, no new grounds can be set, but you can provide additional evidence and you can have a real trial. Similarly, you can appeal to this Property Assessment Appeal Board, which is a much more informal type of board, but they too will hear additional evidence. It's important to know that if the taxpayer wants to challenge, the taxpayer bears the burden of proof, unless the taxpayer brings in two appraisals, in which case the burden of proof shifts to the assessor. Now, that does not mean that the assessor has a higher burden of proof. What it means is
that,
and there is no presumption that the assessor is right, regardless of whether the taxpayer has the burden or the assessor has the burden.
So to get to this point, there's a lot of steps involved. It's all got to be done correctly. It's all got to move along a certain schedule of time, because time is of the essence in all of these things. And I would suspect, in your experience, have you had property taxes reduced when your client or someone goes in and says, hey, this is not correct?
We're successful in reducing the value of a property that was assessed by $3.5 million.
Really?
Yes. It was a very unique situation. It was a unique building. And it was clear that in the particular case, the assessor had not actually gone into the building. And quite honestly, they didn't realize that the building had an atrium.
Oh, my.
So, you know, it's one of those. Quite frankly, Michael, the assessors do a fairly good job. And it's sort of the rare case where there's that size of a
certainly
change.
But what you're pointing out is that property owners, homeowners, commercial property owners have the right or the opportunity to question those assessments and then do something about it.
I'd like to spend our last few minutes together talking a little bit about what should be done now
right.
and how to do it.
Okay.
the first thing that people should do now relative to their property taxes is figure out what their property is assessed at now. And they should sort of take a look at that and say, does that seem about right? Quite frankly, property taxes are 4% of a rollback number. So if it's not, I don't know, maybe $10,000 off, you may have to decide whether or not you truly want to challenge this. And the reason for that is at a millage rate of, 4%, there's got to be enough in it to make it worthwhile. The second thing, if you feel that there has been a significant change in value, or if you are being asked to pay a significant amount more, or if you're looking around at the assessor's website and you see that other properties around you are changing in value, then what I would do is get two appraisers to come out and take a look at the property. I would say that at the initial stage, do what we have already discussed to be a windshield appraisal. Generally, what do they think is the fair value of the property? Because if you are prepared with these two appraisals at the front end, you can make a better case both to the Board
because
of Review.
You've got the facts sitting in real.
It's important. Then, at the Board of Review level, and more importantly, at District Court or at the Property Assessment Appeal Board, it's very important that you have capable counsel to help guide you through the process, because one misstep leads you into the abyss. There's one final thing that I want to make sure that our listeners are aware of. And the reason I want to make sure they're aware of it is because it's fairly new. It's called the Business Property Tax Credit. Business property qualifies for a tax credit of itself, and it's actually the commercial property class. This tax credit is based on the parcel that is owned by an individual. It's one of those things not completely unlike the homestead credit, which the government kind of computes the amount. And all you have to do to get this credit is to apply for it for the commercial property. I think it's something that's not widely known and that many people could take advantage of. So one of the other things that I want to do is to make sure that our listeners are aware not only of the process for property tax appeals, not only what they can do about it if they feel that their property is overassessed, but also to be aware that there's this credit out there that they can take advantage of.
Sam Creamer, ladies and gentlemen, talking about property taxes, reducing your property taxes, or at least knowing what the heck they are. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you very much, Michael.
All right. Always a pleasure. Sam Creamer from the Creamer Law Firm. You want more on this? We will have all of the links up on the radio blog as soon as that's published. All right, we've got to step aside. Next up, the Wall Street Report. What happened today with the markets? I can tell you they were pretty shaky earlier in the day. We'll see how that all shook out after 3 o'clock this afternoon. Next, here on the Business News Hour.